Welcome to the shiur in Gur Aryeh, Parshas Vayechi. I want to see a Gur Aryeh this week, a comment of the Maral, that speaks to the existence of Kever Rachel, the fact that Rachel Imena was buried in a separate tomb, not buried within the Maharsha Machpelah, with the rest of the Avos and Imos, and also speaks a little bit more about the whole notion that Yaakov Avinu had more than one wife. And you know what the significance that has in terms of Jewish history. Beginning of the parasha, Perek Memches, Pasuk Zayin. So Yaakov Avinu on his sickbed is speaking to Yosef, and he says, "Va'ani dizoyni padon." As for me, when I came back from Aram, Meisal I Rachel be'eretz Kanan b'derech. Rachel passed away for me. On the way when I came back to Eretz Canaan, Bo'od Kivat Eretz Lavo Ephros, that was a short way away from coming to Ephros. Bo'ekterel Shom B'derech Ephros Yi Beis Lechem. I buried her there on the way to Ephros, Ephros being in Beis Lechem. Right? So the question is, why does Yaakov Avinu introduce all of a sudden a mention of the fact that Rachel died on the way, that he buried Rachel, you know, in this roadside grave, you know, on the way to Beit Lechem? What does that have to do with anything? So Rashi explains that Hakol Pish Ani Matriach Olecha LaHolicheni LeKavir BeEretz Kanan. You know, I'm asking you, Yaakov says to Yosef, to take me when I pass away in Egypt, to take me back to Eretz Yisrael and bury me there in the Baras of Achelo. But Lekachol Pishi LeInecha. And you might say to me, yeah, but Dad, you didn't do that when Mom passed away. Mom passed away and you buried her right there on the side of the road. So by rights, if you pass away in Mitzrayim, I should bury you here in Mitzrayim as well. She passed away here in Beis Lechem, and you buried her in Beis Lechem. And she continues to ask you a little bit further, I buried her right there. I didn't even bring her to Beit Lechem, the short march to Beit Lechem, to bury her in Beit Lechem, to bury her inside of Eretz Yisrael. I didn't even do that. I buried her there on the way, before we formally made our way into Eretz Yisrael. The Yodafi Shiesh Velibcha Olai. And I know that you have complaints against me, says Yaakov to Yosef, because after all, you know, this is your mother, your beloved mother. She passed away. You would think that at the very least, I would bring her a short distance away to Beit Lechem, you know, and give her what would be a more honorable burial. And here I buried her right on the side of the road in something that, at least the way Rashi seems to learn, is not even really technically part of Eretz Yisrael. Right? So, if you look, by the way, the Gurari comments on that, she wasn't buried in Eretz Yisrael. That's what it sounds like from Rashi. Right? I didn't bring her to Beit Lechem to bring her into Eretz Yisrael. I buried her on the way. So, I buried her on the way. She's not in Eretz Yisrael. The Kevin Rachel's not in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, I still didn't think that. Okay, maybe that's true, but you know, that's not our perspective. So, by the way, the Maharal comments over here very briefly. You should know that, of course, Rachel was buried in Eretz Yisrael. Kesiv Meifalai Rachel to Eretz Canaan. Just a few moments ago, we said in the Pasuk that Rachel passed away in Eretz Canaan, which was Eretz Yisrael. So she was buried right when she passed away. That is Eretz Yisrael. Right, so the Gur Aryeh here quotes and somewhat unusually agrees with the Rebbe Eliyahu Mizrachi that when it says over here that Yaakov tells Yosef, I didn't bring her l'Beis Lechem l'chnisa l'aretz, to bring her into Aretz, it doesn't mean that I didn't bring her into Eretz Yisrael. Aretz in this context just means I didn't bring her to a place of civilization. I didn't bring her to a land that, you know, where there were regular cemeteries and the like. I should have brought her to Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem was a city. Beit Lechem presumably had a cemetery, you know, where there were other people buried. I buried her on the side of the road, you know, without anybody else being there, without anything else. What's that? Okay, so good. So it wasn't, so not, not, not in the cemetery per se, but at least in an area that was, you know, a little bit more populated. You know, apparently that was, that would be considered to be a bigger kavod, right? So, so I didn't do that. But again, the Maral clarifies that the statement over here is not that that she was buried in Chutzal Ha'aretz. She was just buried in a somewhat you know, uncultivated area. Okay, but in any case, just going back to the Rashi itself, Rashi says, Yodati sheish v'libcha olayin. Yaakov says to Yosef, I know that you have complaints against me because of what seems to be a disrespectful way which I treated your mother when she passed away. Avodalecha. But you should know, Rashi continues, again putting words into Yaakov Avinu's mouth, you know, speaking to Yosef, Shafi adibo kar ki hasham. When I buried Rachel there, it was based on a divine directive. Shetehela Ezra lebonehah kishiyagle osam lebuzaradon. That Rachel should be a source of help to her children when the Buzaradon, the general of the Babylonians, is going to exile her in the, exile the Jewish people in the future. Vahayu avrim derech sham. When the Jews would be marched past the grave of Rachel Imenu, Yashash Rachel al Kivra, Rachel would go out, she'd exit. Again, so to speak, right, she's buried, but, you know, so to speak, the spirit of Rachel would emerge from her grave. Ubocha, she would cry, Umabakeshus aleim rachamim, and she would request mercy for her children. Shnemai kobirama nishma, as the Pulpit famously says in Yirmiyahu, we read it the second day of Rosh Hashanah. There's a voice heard in Ramah, there's a voice heard on high, Kol Rachel Mevakra Abonah, it's the sound of Rachel Imenu crying for her children. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meshiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to Rachel Imenu, Yesh Tzachar Lefulo Seichnu Mashem, yes, there is a reward for everything that you're doing. In other words, you Rachel, when you cry to the Jewish people, you will, you know, your cries will be answered. The Shavu Banin Rehulam, ultimately the Jewish people will return to their borders. Why? In the merit of Rachel Imenu crying, you know, and beseeching the Ribbono Shel Olam to allow the Jewish people to come back from exile. How does Rachel have the opportunity to ask the Jewish people to come back from exile? Right? It's because she was buried there on that grave by the side of the road. The implication seems to be in Rashi. Had Rachel not been buried there, had Rachel been brought to the Maris of Machpelah, she wouldn't have been as effective in, or maybe not effective at all, in asking the Ribbono Shel Olam to bring Klal Yisrael back from the Golos. So therefore, again, in conclusion, Yaakov says to Yosef, I had no choice but to bury Rachel there, because I foresaw that burying Rachel there would ultimately benefit the entire Jewish people. It wasn't an act of disrespect. If anything, it was an act of, you know, profound caring on behalf of the Jewish people that I buried Rachel there. That's the Rashi. The Gurari explores a little bit more in depth what all of this means, you know. Rachel is Davka buried in this grave, you know, it's Davka because she's there, that she's able to help out the Jewish people going into exile. What does all this mean? So, the Gurari starts off asking as follows. The Intoma, the Lama Rachel Bocha Yosra Mishari Mos. Why is it that Rachel, of all of the imahos, of all of the matriarchs, is the one crying out to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Is it just the accident, quote unquote, that the Jewish exiles marched by her grave, and they didn't have the opportunity to march by the Ma'aretz HaMachpelah? Or is there something more to it, that it's Rachel specifically who's crying out on behalf of the Jewish exiles? Well, the Medrash Eicha Rabbasi, famous Medrash in the beginning of the Medrash Eicha, it brings the following. Oh, my son, the Fisher Rachel Imenu Omeres HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ma Otsu Bonai, Shikache Vesalem Poranus. Here in the Medrash Eicha, Rachel turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, God, what did my children do that they deserve such a horrific punishment that they're being brought out to exile? In the Shvil Avodah Zor, Shnikres Tzara, maybe you'll tell me that they worship idols, so to speak. You know, the Jewish people are described as being the wife of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and in worshipping idols, in a certain sense, they cheated on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. you know, they went with a foreign husband, a foreign relationship. No, that shouldn't bother you, Rachel, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hello, Ohavti Ishi Yaakov. I love my husband Yaakov of Avi Zayin Shanim, and indeed Yaakov worked for me for love on for 7 years. Ulvasov Nafran Avi Lo Esachosi Leisha. And in the end of the day, my father Lavan tricked Yaakov and gave my sister Leah instead to Yaakov Avinu as a wife. V'kibalti ahavasi l'bali, and I accepted, I decided to forego the love that I had for my husband. Masarti asimonu l'achosi. Again, as the Gemara Megillah describes, I gave over the signs to Leah Imenu that, again, Rachel and Yaakov had made certain signs between the two of them that Rachel would prove that she was Rachel on her wedding night. She gave over all of that information, all of those signs and those secrets to Leah. So Leah was able to fool Yaakov and convince him that she was in fact Rachel. So, you know, I gave up the love that I had for my husband and really sacrificed myself in that way. And you both serve Adam. I'm merely flesh and blood, says Rachel. Yasser Melech Rachamon. And you're a king, a compassionate king. Alachas Kano Vakamashi Tirachim Aleim. How much more so should you have mercy upon them, the Jewish people? Okay, so they worship Avodah Zarah. But, you know, I was able to overlook the fact that a deep relationship, which I cared about a lot, was compromised. So you, Rabbanu Shalom, should also overlook the fact that a deep relationship that you care about was also compromised. And the Rabbanu Shalom says, good point, therefore I say that Jewish people are going to come back home. Right, that's the Medrash, a very famous Medrash. But let's understand what this Medrash is saying. Rachel knew from the get-go, says the Ma'aral, that Yaakov Avinu had to marry at least two wives. Right? In other words, from the get-go, Rachel realized that whether it was her and Leah or someone else, it couldn't be that Yaakov would only have a single wife. Why not? After all, Yitzchak only had a single wife, right? So why is it so hard to imagine that Yaakov should only have one wife? So says the Ma'aral, ki ein ha'olam hazeh shu olam ha'chiluk v'ha'pirud roi shi'akob ba'achdus. The world in which we live is a world in which there's diversity. It's a world in which we can't really have absolute unity. Right? To try to perhaps give a little bit more explanation to this, I think what the Ma'aral is saying is we live in a world which is complicated. Right? When Moshiach comes, you know, everything is going to be crystal clear and there's going to be one way of doing things, but until that time, you live in a world which is very complex, a world which is very complicated, where people have different perspectives on things, where there's a lot of diversity, where there's a lot of fighting between different groups in the world. So, you know, we don't yet live in a world where there's perfect unity. In lo hoyo wa Yaakov raf isha achas, Hayu Yisrael Echad. Had Yaakov Avinu in theory only had a single wife, so then all of Klal Yisrael would have descended from a single mother. Lo Hayu Yehuda Mileya, the Ephraim Mirachel. And we wouldn't have a situation like we have now, where Yehuda, representing one major figure with one major segment within Klal Yisrael, would be descended from one wife, from Leah. And Yosef would be descended from Rachel. We wouldn't have that situation. Now, when Moshiach comes, as we just read in last week's Haftarah, in Parshas Vayigash, the Pasuk in Yechezkel describes how Yehuda and Yosef and the tribes that are associated with Yehuda and Yosef are going to be melded back together. Again, we read the Haftarah last week, how Yechezkel Hanavi is told, take two pieces of wood. One, it says Yehuda. The other piece of wood, it says Yosef. And put the two pieces of wood together so that they're miraculously going to be melded together. That's when Moshiach comes. Both the the tribe of Yehuda, which survived, and the Aseret HaShvatim, the ten tribes of the north, which went into Galus, are going to be reunited. Okay, good. That's going to be when Mashiach comes. But right now, the world is a world which is diverse, which is fragmented, which is not, 100% together. And even Klal Yisrael is diverse and fragmented. And the idea that Klal Yisrael is diverse and fragmented is not, is something that had to be that way. Because the very diversity of Klal Yisrael is reflective of the fact that the world itself is diverse and complex. If Klal Yisrael was overly united, Klal Yisrael wouldn't be able to function in the world in which we live, which is a world of complexity. When Rachel realized this, in other words, that Yaakov Avinu having more than one wife is not just, something that kind of worked out that way, or not just, Laban tricked Yaakov, but somehow built into the plan itself for the future of the Jewish people, is that Yaakov Avinu should have more than one wife to represent this idea of diversity and lack of uniformity within Klal Yisrael. When Rachel realized that, she said, oh, I accept with love that which has been perpetrated on me as a trick. I accept that not just because I'm a nice person, but I see that this idea of Yaakov Avinu having more than one wife is actually essential for the future history of Klal Yisrael. It's a very interesting idea for the Maharal. I just want to kind of pause here and maybe talk about this a little bit. There's a basic question which I know has been asked here in the Shiur before when we did the Gemara Megillah that parallels that Medrash in Eicha. The Chazal depict Rachel in these very sacrificial terms, these very altruistic terms. Here she was slated to marry Yaakov Avinu, the love of her life, and circumstances worked out against her, and instead of complaining, instead of rallying against it, instead she does what's right for her sister. She gives over the simanim, she gives over the signs to Leah, so she can enable Leah to trick Yaakov Avinu as well, and to get this man whom Leah wants to marry very desperately. And that's beautiful, that's wonderful. And the question was raised before, okay, that's really, really nice for Rachel to do for Leah, but what a nasty thing for Rachel to do for Yaakov. That wasn't really nice. You're portraying her as being very selfless and very sacrificial and very altruistic, and she's helping out Leah, but Lanisa, she was a co-conspirator in pulling the wool over the eyes of Yaakov Avinu. So why is that so nice? That's not so nice at all. Right? Why doesn't anyone have a problem with Rachel acting in such a fashion? Although the Maharal doesn't ask this question directly, the idea that he's developing, I think, at least in part, does address this idea. It's not just, what's at stake here, as is true with all of the stories of the Avos and the Imos, is not just the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. We can't extrapolate lessons from the Avos and Imos about how you and I should act under similar circumstances, because the issues that are confronting the Avos and Imos are not just issues that deal with them on the interpersonal level. They're not just individuals. They are the architects of the Jewish people. They are building what ultimately is going to become Klal Yisrael. And to the extent to which Rachel realizes that the plan for Klal Yisrael is for Yaakov Avinu to be married to two wives, and that's necessary for Klal Yisrael's good, so she, the issue that she has to confront is not just an issue that she's confronting as an individual. It's the right thing for her to enable Yaakov's marriage to Leah for the sake of Klal Yisrael, for the sake of the fact that, it's necessary for Klal Yisrael to be descended from at least two different women because of this idea of diversity and lack of uniformity that apparently has to be part and parcel of the Jewish people, right? So, in other words, the takeaway lesson is, if you and I were confronted with this situation, it could be that the right thing to do would not be what Rachel did. Whereas for you and I, you know, we have to take into account not just Leah's feelings and sensitivities, but Yaakov's feelings and sensitivities. Now, how do we have the right to deceive Yaakov as much as it might help out Leah? Right? The reason it's a different calculus when it comes to Rachel is because Rachel is plotting the whole future of the Jewish people, and that leads to a whole set of, you know, calculations that she has to have, you know, and thoughts that she has to have, you know, not just thinking about this immediate situation, but realizing that for Klal Yisrael's sake, it makes sense to have two wives, right? For Yaakov Avinu to have two wives. It's just an interesting point that I think comes out from this Maral. Good, so Rachel Rimeinu makes this decision. She accepts the fact that Leah is going to be Yaakov's wife as well. Yeah. But it's interesting, right? In other words, according to the Maral, Rachel had a certain insight that Yaakov lacked, right? Perhaps it's Davka because Rachel came from the kind of background that she came from. In other words, Yaakov Avinu came, you know, his father was Yitzchak Avinu, who's described as the Olam Tmima, you know, this righteous, pious, you know, incredible individual. For Yaakov Avinu, maybe he saw the world in a very non-complex kind of way, you know. For Yaakov Avinu, growing up in the house of Yitzchak, there's one truth, it's pretty obvious, it's self-evident, and that's the world, right? You know, if you grow up in such an environment of purity, so the world is kind of simple, you know. It's actually because the Rachel Imenu, you know, grows up in the house of a loved one, that she appreciates that the world is and maybe has to be a little bit more complex, you know, than all of that. That the world is complicated, that you have a lot of people out there who are, you know, looking to deceive and do deceive, and, you know, different perspectives on things and fights back and forth, you know, between different people. That was probably much more a part of Rachel's life than it was of Yaakov's. So perhaps she figured out somehow, she intuited this idea that life has to be complex, Klal Yisrael has to be complex, and maybe she got it more than Yaakov Avinu did, you know, because of that life experience that she had. So the Maral doesn't address all of this, it's just conjecture. But it is striking, you know, according to the Maral, Rachel figures out something that Yaakov Avinu was not aware of, you know. What's that?
What have we learned out of this?
Right, so my shalvah shalom abam doesn't necessarily mean that you and I can go ahead and do what the others did. In other words, like if you wake up one morning and hear a voice in your head that says, take your son up to a mountain and sacrifice him, I don't think we say, oh, my shalvah shalom abam, and so, you know, try to follow through. Right? My shalvah shalom abam means that the actions of the others lay the groundwork for Klal Yisrael.
Yeah. This is for the
right. So I think it's because a lot of these actions really are unique to the Avos and Imos because of the fact that they're building the foundations of Klal Yisrael. Meaning, you know, to some extent, the regular rules that would apply to you and me don't apply to them. Right. I think for you and me, if we were faced with a very analogous kind of situation, we would have to be concerned about the deception being perpetrated on Yaakov Avinu. That would be the appropriate thing for you and me. The only reason it's different for Rachel is because, you know, this idea that she's involved in the, you know, that this has more cosmic significance, you know, than just, you know, for her relationship alone. I think that's, you know, what one can derive from this Maral. Because of that, says the Maral, that's the continuation of the Medrash. Rachel says, I, you know, allowed my would-be husband to marry another wife, so therefore you, Ribono Shel Olam, don't get so upset when Klal Yisrael embraces Avodah Zarah. What's her argument? Her argument is, why is there Avodah Zarah in the world? Avodah Zarah stems from the fact that the world itself is complex, says the Maral. What's Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is the attempt to worship other forces in the world other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. if we really saw that everything in the world goes back to God, we wouldn't engage in Avodah Zarah. But Avodah Zarah is seeing a complex world and attributing greater powers to other forces rather than seeing that everything in the end goes back to one uniform Ribbono Shel Olam who controls everything. Says Rachel Imenu, I appreciate that the world is complex, and that's why I saw that Yaakov Avinu had to have two wives. So by the same token, Ribbono Shel Olam, I want you to Yaakov realize that people also think the world is complex, they see the world as complex, and that very complexity leads people to worship Avodah Zarah. You know, so Ribbono Shel Olam, the same way that I appreciated that there's a complexity in life, and that, you know, sometimes we have to embrace that complexity. I'm not saying Ribbono Shel Olam, therefore Avodah Zarah is good, but at least Avodah Zarah is understandable. You can see where people are coming from, that they worship Avodah Zarah, because that's the world, that's the complex world, which you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, created. So what do you want from people? Right? And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you know, you're right. You know, again, not to say that it's right to worship Avodah Zarah, but at least I can understand where people are coming from when they worship Avodah Zarah. They're victims of the world which I created, which is a complex world. We'll continue, Be'ezus Hashem, this complex topic after Ma'ariv. There's a Chabad ben Akasha Omer. Hey, welcome to part two, Shin Goriari Pashas Vayisi. So the first part that we just saw a few moments ago is the Gur Aryeh being Nazir trying to explain both the Gemara and Megillah and the Medrash Eicha that talks about why Rachel Imenu was able to exert such that her tefillos were so powerful on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Again, the Medrash says that when Klal Yisrael, you know, go into Golos, it's Rachel Imenu specifically who goes and beseeches the Ribbono Shel Olam to have mercy on her, on his children, and for Klal Yisrael to be ultimately restored back to Eretz Yisrael. And then she explains, she says, the Ribbono Shel Olam, God, you know, when I was ready to get married to the love of my life, to Yaakov Avinu, I had no problem stepping aside so that my sister Leah could marry him as well. So Ribbono Shel Olam, it shouldn't bother you so much that Klal Yisrael, you know, compromise their relationship with you by embracing Avodah Zarah. So what does that really mean? So explains the Maharal, Rachel Imenu recognized this idea that the world is complex, and because the world is complex, Klal Yisrael is complex, and Klal Yisrael has to come through multiple, or at least more than one wife, so that there should be different divisions within Klal Yisrael as part of the way the world works, as part of the way Klal Yisrael works. It wouldn't work for Klal Yisrael just to be uniform. So I understood that idea, and that's why I stepped aside to allow Leah to marry Yaakov initially, right, the way the Maharal understands. It's not that Rachel gave up marrying Yaakov altogether. She realized that she was going to marry Yaakov, the way the Maharal seems to understand. So, you know, she understood that Leah had to do it first, and that there had to be, you know, multiple wives with Yaakov Avinu. So it's that very complexity and diversity that gives rise to Avodah Zarah. So Ribbono Shel Olam bimochel the Jewish people because of that diversity. How do you suppose that Yud and Binyamin are dafka together and Yosef is dafka with the other one? So I think my answer to that would be, well, that's part of the complexity. Right? You know, Hogufa, that's part of the complexity of life. Right, well, I think Yaakov's question is, okay, but why geographically would they put next to one another, right? In other words, okay, all right, you know, but nothing has happened to him either. You know, it could be that this Maharal could help us understand something we've raised from year to year on Tisha B'Av. If you look in the Kina that describes the Kina's version of this Medrash, the Kina starts off, I think it's Lamed Aleph, Oz B'Haloch Yirmiyahu Kivrei Avos. Right, the Kina describes how Yirmiyahu went and he dived into the Maris HaMachpelah and he asked for the Avos to come and beseech the Ribbono Shel Olam to bring Klal Yisrael back from their Golos. So the Kina there describes how Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah all davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and because all four of those mothers of the Jewish people davened to the Ribbono Shel Olam, God said, okay, v'shavu banam l'gvulam. And on the surface, that rendition of the kina is really at odds with the Medrash the way we have it. The whole point of the Medrash is the greatness of Rachel Imenu, and, you know, how she sacrificed herself. It doesn't really make sense, you know, for Leah, Bilha, and Zilpah to play a role, you know, from that perspective. It also doesn't even fit in with the Pesukim. I mean, the Medrash is based on the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu. Kol Rachel Mevakel Al Boneha. It's the sound of Rachel crying for her children. It doesn't say anything in the Pesuk about Leah, Bilha, Zilpah, and the like. You know, so like, where did the Kina come from? Where did the Kina get this idea of, you know, Rachel, Leah, Bilha, and Zilpah all crying and affecting the Geula? According to the Maral, I think you actually understand it, because according to the Maral, the whole point that Rachel is bringing out in her conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam is, you know, Klal Yisrael had to come from different mothers because of the complexity of the world. So, you know, being that the world is complex and Klal Yisrael is complex, you know, you can look the other way when Klal Yisrael engaged in Avodah Zarah, because that's just the function of this complex world in which we live. In other words, Rachel may have articulated this argument, but the argument is brought about by the very existence of Rachel, Leah, Bilha, and Zilpah. Right? It's their very role in building Klal Yisrael, which is the basis of the argument that Rachel makes. So maybe, again, I'm not sure, but maybe that's where that kina is coming from, according to the Maral's interpretation. You know, is the kino based, in years past we've asked, you know, is the kino based on some letters that we don't have, you know, that Bilha, Zilpah, Rachel, and Leah were all crying out to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Again, but hard to fit that into the pasuk. Maybe the kino understands the letters the same way the Maral does. It's not so much Rachel per se, but it's the whole fact that Klal Yisrael comes from different mothers. You know, that there are different women involved in the creation of Klal Yisrael, the complexity, the diversity of Klal Yisrael, which is ultimately the argument which is being made to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay, that's a thought. The Maral then ends the following. O Yesh B'Medrash, there's another Medrash in Beis Rabbah that says this follows. Racha Mavaka Obaneho. Yisrael Nikraim Al Shem Rachel. The entire Jewish people are referred to as Rachel. But it says Rachel Mevakel Al Boneha. It's not just talking about Rachel in the narrow sense of the term, but Rachel is a term that encompasses all of Klal Yisrael. So Lo Al Shem Rachel, Ela Al Shem Bina. Not only are Klal Yisrael referred to as Rachel, but they're referred to by the name of her son Yosef, Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Amos, Ula Yichanei Hashem Tzvako Sheiris Yosef. Maybe God will have mercy on the remnant of Yosef. Right now, Yosef, in that context, doesn't just mean those who are descended from the tribe of Yosef. Yosef is a way of referring to Klal Yisrael. The law of shame b'no, al shame ben b'no. Hazen yakir li Ephraim. And not only are we called Rachel, not only is Rachel a term that refers to all Jews, not only is Yosef a term that refers to all Jews, but even the grandson of Rachel, Ephraim, his name is one which is associated with all Jews. Again, that pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Hazen yakir li Ephraim, is not Ephraim a beloved son to me? Ephraim, in that context, at least according to the Midrash, is a reference to the entire Jewish people. So the entire Jewish people can be referred to not only as Yisrael, but specifically as Rachel, and as, you know, as Yosef, and as Ephraim, because somehow the identity of Rachel is more than just Rachel, it's an identity that, you know, is connected to the entire Jewish people. Right, so that's less surprising, because after all, we are all descended from Yaakov. But we're not all descended from Rachel, we're not all descended from Yosef, we're not all descended from Ephraim, at least in a biological sense. And yet, the terms Rachel, Yosef, and Ephraim can be terms, according to the Medrash, which describe Klal Yisrael as a whole, notwithstanding the fact that all of us sitting in this room are actually probably not descended from either Rachel, Yosef, or Ephraim. Again, assuming most of us are descended from Yehuda, again, not necessarily, but likely, most of us are descended from Yehuda, so that means, you know, we're really descended from Leah. We really have nothing to do with Yosef or Ephraim. And when we say Rachel is Rachel Imenu, in a biological sense, it's not exactly true, you know. She's not the mom of Rachel, you know. She's maybe the, you know, right, yeah, Tante Rachel, you know, something like that, right? But it's not exactly true that she's Rachel Imenu in a biological sense. I'm sorry? Right, so again, I don't think the medrash means to say, and we're not called after Yehuda, but isn't it interesting how, you know, Rachel, Yosef, and Ephraim are also terms, also names that, you know, become symbolic of the Jewish people as a whole. V'zal ha-medrash yeshlo sod Yosef. There's a deep secret in this medrash. Ki karo kesef Yisrael Rachel, v'fi sh'rocha ha-keres ha-bayi shol Yaakov, ha-kol tofel eslo. L'chach hi k'mo beis Yaakov. Rachel was, after all, the most beloved wife of Yaakov Avinu. She was the Akeres Abayis. She was the one who was considered to be, you know, the foundation of the Bayis of Yaakov Avinu, the foundation of the home of Yaakov Avinu. And as such, even though she's the biological mother of only really a fraction of the Jewish people, and maybe none of, you know, virtually none of the Jewish people who are alive today, nonetheless, Rachel becomes identified with the Jewish people as a whole, because she's, in a sense, the main wife of Yaakov Avinu. Even though, interestingly, again, Leah has many more children, right? But Rachel occupies this unique position. And the entire Klal Yisrael, Beis Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, can be referred to as Rachel. And it's through Rachel Imenu that the Jewish people can come back to Eretz Yisrael, to be reconnected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In essence, says the Maharal, the Kever Rachel, right, the tomb of Rachel Imenu, becomes representative of the Jewish people as a whole. And again, that's even in the pasuk itself, in Yirmiyahu, you see that idea. Rachel mevako al boneho. Rachel is crying for her children. What do you mean she's crying for her children? What do you mean? You know, Yosef and Binyamin? And is she crying for anybody else? The implication of the pasuk, the simple implication of the pasuk, is that she's crying for all descendants of all 12 of the Shvatim. But that's not really boneho. Says the Maharal, no, they are boneho. In other words, you know, the whole point of the Medrash is that Rachel specifically, in a way in which Leah doesn't, and Bilhah and Zilpah don't, you know, Rachel becomes emblematic of the Jewish people as a whole. Therefore, putting Rachel on that outpost, you know, not in the Ma'ara Samachpelah, but so to speak, on the way out to Golos, becomes almost a magnet to be able to attract Klal Yisrael back from the Golos and a conduit to bring them, you know, back to Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
So the notion that she's crying out Bonero, when the truth is most of the people who are being taken to Golos are children of Leah, you know, is striking. But again, Rachel becomes emblematic of the Jewish people of as a whole. It's for that reason that Rachel was buried in, you know, on the way, you know, not in the Ma'aras Machpelah with everybody else. The whole point was that Rachel would not be with the other avos; she would be with her children. You know, in a sense, she's also in Golos. Her kever, her tomb, is in Golos. That gives her a certain attachment to her children while they're still in Golos. When Rashi says that, you know, Rachel was buried not ba'aretz, not in the land, we already saw the Maharal says it doesn't mean that she wasn't buried in Eretz Yisrael. She was buried in Eretz Yisrael, but she was sort of buried out there in the wilderness. She was buried on the side of the road. She was buried in a place that was sort of remote from civilization, although that's a place which is technically in Eretz Yisrael, but it symbolizes the Golos. It symbolizes being out in the hinterlands, right? So perhaps that's why Rashi uses that term. You know, I didn't want to bring her to Beit Lechem, lach nisa la'aretz, to bring her into the aretz, you know, not that Rashi needs to say that she wasn't buried in Eretz Yisrael, but she was buried in a place that had a smell of Chutzal Ha'aretz, even though it was in Eretz Yisrael itself, because that would be symbolic of Klal Yisrael who were in Chutzal Ha'aretz and would be brought back ultimately to Eretz Yisrael. That's why she was buried where she was. Since they are, Klal Yisrael is in exile, outside of their proper place, Rachel serves as a koach kibbutz. I would translate that as a magnet. She serves as a force for gathering, you know, for the Jewish people, bringing them from their various lands of dispersion back to Eretz Yisrael. And since she represents Klal Yisrael in her very essence, you know, she is, you know, emblematic of the Jewish people. She can fill that role in a way in which Leah couldn't necessarily. So as much as it seems kind of unfair for Leah to be buried in the Maras Machpelah and for Rachel to be buried in this sort of out of the way, you know, roadside grave, Yaakov, going back to the Parsha, Yaakov explains to Yosef that Rachel actually is buried there because of a Mila Rachel possesses that Leah does not possess. Leah's just Leah. I mean, well, not just Leah, but I mean, she represents a portion of Klal Yisrael. Rachel represents Klal Yisrael as a whole. And therefore, she has this unique role where she can serve as the magnet to bring Klal Yisrael, who are in Golos, closer and back to Eretz Yisrael. That's what Yaakov Avinu explains to Yosef, which apparently placates him. And, you know, because, you know, we don't see that Yosef complains afterwards about the fact that that Rachel was buried in such a solitary kind of place. You know, that's the Milo of Kevin Rachel, representing the whole notion of Klal Yisrael being in Golos. And ultimately, however, coming back to Eretz Yisrael, that's the emotional pull that the Kevin Rachel has on Klal Yisrael, you know, up to this very day.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a very well answered question, but it might seem like she died on the way.
Right.
What would you expect?
Is she
had
her
body filled
with water? Yeah. In other words, that's what Yaakov is asking of Yosef. I mean, Yaakov says, when I die, let my body back to Eretz Yisrael. Right? So, I mean, Yosef could say, but Dad, you know, but so you should have done the same thing for Mom. You know, I mean, in truth is, you didn't even have to go as far. Right? That's the whole time that Yosef would have had. He doesn't voice it, but that's the time that he could have had, you know, to Yaakov Avinu. Okay, wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos, and we will pick up the Hashem.